Dirty hands means clean theology. Can you dig it?
Welcome back, everybody. I'm glad that you're here and you're watching, you're listening to The Next Step and What Are the Chances? This is the making of the documentary and kind of pushing ourselves forward, kind of seeing where this takes us. But today we're graced with a pretty amazing guest. We have Bruce Malone from the Search for Truth Ministries. Super excited, especially because with this documentary, a lot of this is based off some of my dad's old work and things. And Bruce actually worked with my father on a couple things in the past. So really cool to have him as part of this. I'm super excited and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Steve. It's a real honor and a privilege to follow up with having worked and taught with your dad, decades ago, and now to see you following and doing the same thing. It's great to be here.
I really appreciate it. It's kind of funny because the way when I actually reached out to you, I didn't know that you guys had ever done anything together before. So it was kind of God just kind of putting our paths in place, and it's a pretty amazing thing. So I'm like I said, extremely, extremely blessed. And God, you know, he crosses our paths at times with people that we're supposed to be in contact with. So I really do appreciate you.
Yep. Well, God planted me here in Midland, Michigan 27 years ago. Before that, I was in Ohio. My background is science. I've been a research leader for Dow Chemical for 27 years, using and understanding what science can do and what it can't do. Became a Christian after college, came through our public education system, and essentially God was irrelevant because I had been trained everything could be explained without him, where life came from, where the universe and time, space, matter, energy came from, how human beings developed from some previous form of life. It was all presented as scientific fact. So I assumed it was true, presented by experts. We see it everywhere. Since that time, I've come to realize enormous amounts of evidence is left out of the typical education of everybody around us. So they form a view that if God exists, he's just used this whole evolutionary idea. And that's what we're here to talk about, what's being left out and what is the truth in that area, and how do we impact the thinking of the world around us to move them in the direction of true truth.
Well, and you couldn't have said that any better. And that's why I love the name of your guys' ministry, The Search for Truth. I think that's such a good way of looking at it, because isn't that what, you know, everybody does? I don't care if you're an atheist, a Christian, everybody is in that search for truth. They don't always necessarily look in the right places, but yeah. We all are looking for meaning. We're all looking for truth. And evolution is one of those things that, you know, it's brought up from a young age. Our kids are impacted by it in schools, especially the public school system. You see it in colleges. You see it even as a Christian, you know, you go to church, you do these things, you're confronted by people outside that, oh, you're a Christian. Do you really believe we were created? You really believe these things happened? And a lot of Christians have even said, well, maybe God used evolution. Maybe God did this. And that's just, in my experience, that's not what the evidence shows. But I guess the best way to say this or ask you this is, as a Christian, you know, how do we approach the creation evolution debate? And what is that? Like, what evidence do you pull forward that shows us the truth in that matter?
Well, as a Christian, okay, and I don't even know who all of your audience are, and I'm sure they're not all Christians, and many of them probably are, but as a Christian, we first need to understand the world we live in. We are becoming an increasing minority, and people, regardless of where they are in the world and what religious background they grow up in and what ethnic group they're in, everybody is trained to think and believe and process what is truth, what is reality, through a certain set of data and input and things that they've been heard and things they've been told. And we're three generations down the road in Western civilization, especially America, of the entire public education, media, museum, national park system of only hearing evidence for one viewpoint. And that is that evolution is an absolute fact, that bacteria over time have turned into other creatures that have turned into fish, that have turned into land animals, that have turned into ape-like creatures, that have turned into people, that the Big Bang is absolute reality, and that time, space, energy, matter, it just all made itself, that all over the universe, chemicals are coming together to form life. And we see all these things on alien shows and adventures and science fiction films and fanciful superhero shows are always involving aliens. So that is the viewpoint of the world around us, that that is all reality. So evidence that comes as we observe creation, as we talk about science, it is going to be filtered into that viewpoint of the people around us. And it's going to be presented as science. So your question was, as a Christian, how do we deal with that? And the starting point, and I hope your listeners are going to take this to heart. Our starting point with any conversation as you're trying to make the Bible credible, trying to make God real to them as a real entity who has really interacted with the creation he has made in the past in very specific ways, is to help them understand we're not talking about science versus religion. That is the slanted playing field that the world wants to us to stand back and defend ourselves and try to promote our religion upon other people. It's two philosophical viewpoints, two belief systems that are diametrically opposed to one another. They can't both be true. One belief system says the reason the universe, if you think of the universe as a box, exists, time, space, energy, matter, is because there's something outside of that universe of time, space, energy, matter, what's testable, measurable, tangible, touchable, experimentable, who started it all, who made it all. And he told us he did that 10 times, and that's cosmology. So either it all made itself or there's something outside that made it. Neither one can be proven in a scientific laboratory. They're both philosophical beliefs. Life itself, could chemicals come alive? Could just random processes create the complex chemicals of life, the systems that are needed for the first cell to have come alive? It's a belief that that all happened. Nobody can go back in time. You can't do it in a laboratory, but you can statistically show are certain things possible or they are impossible. God said he made life, and then he told us 10 times he made very separate, distinct forms of life. So that's a model for biology. Now, what can science do? It can systematically look at how things operate and determine are certain things possible or are they impossible? And it can see which of these two viewpoints fits the data the best. So that took maybe, I just talked for maybe 3 or 4 minutes. But as we approach anybody who's trained to leave God out, and even Christians, they're trained to think in a way that leaves God out. Christians are trained in our education system to analyze everything in a leave God out atheistic viewpoint. And we have to understand that, and we have to address it on that level. It's not science versus religion, it's religion versus religion. And where is the truth? Mm-hmm. And if you start the conversation in that way, without attacking specific ideas, without attacking specific beliefs, and get people to the point where they're willing to discuss, well, you know, have we ever seen chemicals come alive? And the answer is going to be no. Then is what you're believing, is it science or is it faith? And it's really faith versus faith. And now you can start looking at what is the evidence. So that was a long answer to your question, but I hope it helps start that conversation groundwork for folks.
I think that's a great way of looking at it, because just like anything else, right? Faith is on any of those things. If when you talk about evolution, when you can't, you know, the stuff that is presented as fact, the stuff that's presented as the truth in schools and saying, and right, these things, we don't see in nature. We don't see these processes. We don't see even, you know, the ideas of like aberrant forms or things like this. We don't see a transitional thing between one species or one animal to another. It's just, we don't see it.
And we'll talk about specific examples of that as we continue to discuss even over this next hour. Instead of talking generalities, this allows us to now lead to specifics. And that's what opens people's eyes, not kind of general overarching statements, but let's talk specific examples of what do we see about life? What do we see about the different kinds of life? So on.
Well, before we do that, I want to give one illustration that I always, and Dr. Kent Hovind was one of the guys I love listening to some of his stuff. And there's a couple other people that have brought up some really good points, but I'm going to do it on a much simpler level. And you see this right here. This is just a pen.
Yep.
Pen, you know, you can click it on and off. This is a very simple thing. There's a little ink cartridge. There's a little grip, a little part that screws on the front. This is extremely simple. But anybody out there who looks at this will say, well, that was made by somebody, right? This is such a simple thing compared to one strand of our DNA that is I can't remember how many million different little segments long.
It's about 3 billion letters billion. Long.
There yeah. you go. 3 yeah. billion. I was way off on that one. So
yeah,
we have, so we say 3 billion letters long. But we have this simple pen that we can definitely say was created by somebody. They put this together. But when we look at our bodies, the fact that we can think something that complex, the human brain is more advanced than anything in this entire world. The thing that we can process, think, feel emotions, reason. It just is something that it blows me away that we can believe that potentially could be an accident. But that's one small thing. But jumping forward, I would like you to, like you had said, you had... talk about a couple specific examples where we see that in nature, right? Where sure. we see that, but go ahead. I'm going to let you dive in.
Well, let me just last night, and this is no coincidence, I had a chance to speak to about 50 students at Northwestern Michigan University or college up in Traverse City. And it was a Christian group, but there were definitely some non-Christian kids there. And I just wanted to zero in on a specific example to put in front of them of that question. Could a step-by-step process have created this very simple bacteria that I'm about to show you, or is it an impossibility? So just like your pen, I've put up a picture of a single cell bacteria, and it has... The simplest form of life we've ever found has about 1,000 parts. Your pen has, I bet, if you pull them apart, about 8. And each of those parts are, as you said, they're just molded. They're molded plastic. There's an ink cartridge that has several components that have come together to form the ink cartridge. It has a tip you can screw on the end. And I actually do this demonstration. It's funny you picked that, because about 2 decades ago, I was in the shower thinking, how can I make it absolutely obvious that a bacteria could never make itself, but people have trouble comprehending the parts of a bacteria, but the parts of a pen are simple. So what I do, and I've done this experiment probably 1,000 times in front of students and churches and universities, and I've spoken to over 300,000 students in 12 nations over the last 20 years, but I'll take the parts of those pens and I'll just drop it into a coffee can, plastic coffee can, the tip, the spring, the ink cartridge, the clip that goes on your pocket. And there's about 7 parts. And then I'll say, you know, each of these parts have to be an exact 3-dimensional shape of exactly the right shape and exactly the right size for it to work as a part of a pen. If the shape is wrong, if the hole is the wrong size, if the ink cartridge isn't there, if the ink isn't inside, every single thing has to be the right size, shape, and in the right position for the pen to function as a little machine, a little mechanism. And a cell is a little machine, a biological machine. So then I say the only thing evolution has to offer is random rearrangement in time. So it's an open system. We'll add energy, and I'll shake the can, and I'll spin it, I'll kick it, and I'll throw it. And I'll say, well, who believes this is going to turn it back into a working mechanism? All the parts are there. We can't even explain without intelligence where the parts came from of a pen. They're specific. And everybody gets the point. So then I say, well, you know, in 1952, scientists added an explosive energy to methane and ammonia and hydrogen gases. And they created these things called amino acids, which are the building blocks of proteins. The parts of a living cell are primarily proteins. They're like stringing together all these beads, but the beads have to be in a specific order so that the whole chain will bend and fold to form the great three-dimensional shape. And if even one bead's out of position, like of Lego blocks, if you don't stack them correctly, you don't get the final part. And if you don't have the final part, it doesn't work in another part, and then you can't make the structure. You get the concept. That's what God has done. The amino acids are his Lego blocks. So then I add a firecracker to the can. Okay, drop in a firecracker. Boom, lots of energy. The lid blows off. Smoke comes billowing out. And then I reach into that can and I pull out a reassembled pin because I've hidden a second pin in the can. Now, everybody watching this immediately bursts into spontaneous laughter because what I have just done is so over the top absurd, it's completely laughable. Uncontrollably laughable. I can do it with 1,000 kids in a school system, and they all break out laughing because it's ridiculous. But then I drive home a point, and 20 years later, if anything else I've ever done is forgotten, everybody always remembers what I did there with that can, because I combine humor and reality and surprise with profound teaching. When I pulled out that reassembled can, I deceived you by pretending the impossible is the impossible. And that's what folks who believe in evolution are doing, because they're trained to believe it, because it leaves out the only other possibility. There's an intelligent designer called God who had to have lined up the amino acids, had to have made the right shapes. And there's 1,000 of them, and every single protein, every single shape in even the simplest cell of life has to all be there at once or nothing works. So it's a billion times more complex than what they just laughed at. Mm-hmm. And yet we are involved in an education system that is systematically training every single child that comes through that system that something absurdly laughable, a billion times more ridiculous than what they just laughed at, is actually truth and reality. And we know it's not true, because science works by observation and experimentation. In every experiment ever done, even when we cheat and start with these complex chemicals, parts that can't make themselves, we can never get them to come alive. And we spent billions of dollars and millions of experiments and labs all over the country and hundreds of years trying to make it happen. And the result of every experiment is the same. Chemicals never come alive. And statistically, we can show them why it can't happen. Last thought. You see, science works so that we can understand that God made an organized, systematic universe that works by understandable, reproducible laws. So we will know what happens today will happen tomorrow, and we can depend on it. And it's what we've allowed us to produce cell phones and airplanes and combustion engines and refrigeration and send men to the moon, because it's a tool that helps us understand creation. But God also told us he did certain things that could never have done themselves: the creation of life, the creation of matter and energy. And he holds us accountable to that. In the book of Romans, it says, everybody is without excuse. This is Romans 1, chapter 9, verse 19 and 20. For belief in him by observing creation. Mm-hmm. We can even understand his very power and nature. So everyone is without excuse for belief in God by observing creation. You see, God made the universe in such a way that by observing it, we will know it couldn't have made itself. He made life in such a way that by observing it and using science, we will know it couldn't have made itself. So nobody, whether they've got a Bible in front of them, whether they're born in a culture somewhere in the jungle, whether they lived 2,000 years ago or today, nobody can stand before God someday and say, I would have believed in you, I would have obeyed you, I would have followed you if I just knew you existed. Because the evidence is in front of every single human being because of creation. This is an important topic.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think it's funny that that experiment you just talked about with the coffee can and the,
yeah.
I'm fairly certain my dad might have stole that one from you because he would do that at school for the kids.
He did.
He'd put a, all the Lego pieces of a Lego guy in there and say, you think it's going to get put together? Put the firecracker in there. It goes up and he'd pull out a full Lego guy, just like you were talking about.
He took my idea. He didn't improve upon it, which is intelligence. That's what we do. God bless him. Yeah.
No, I just absolutely love it.
Yep. Yep. So,
well, going forward and using this now, you know, like I said, we're getting this and I know it's my job. And feel free to jump in wherever you feel and take this. I always like to say when we do these shows that we let the Holy Spirit lead the way because somebody out there needs to hear something specific that we're talking about. One of my main concerns as a whole is, you know, like you said, we get indoctrinated from this from the very beginning. You know, kids are hearing this stuff, you know, in first and second grade when we start hearing about science and all these things and we have this indoctrination. You know, I know it's my job as a parent to help my kid through those things. But as you get to an age when you're very impressionable, high school, college, how do we equip these, you know, my kids right now, I have a kid who's 14, another one that's 10. How do I equip those kids to be ready? How do they respond in those situations when we get faced with that? And it's everything around when he goes to college, when he goes, you know, even past that, how do we equip the next generation? Because you're right. It's a dwindling population. The Christian, the true Christian believers is a dwindling population. And the ideas of what is truly, you know, looking at the Bible as science fact, because it's the truth. You know, we know the Bible's true based on and exactly what you said, but Romans 1:19 tells us that exact thing that, you know, no one can deny him through seeing the creation that he's made.
Right.
So how do we equip these kids? Like what, how do we stand on that apologetically? Like what evidence do you have for these kids to show them? And then on top of that, can they impact the people around them by showing them these things as well? Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And it's a phenomenal question. And every parent who has kids, especially young kids, you know, from 5 years all the way on up into the early teens, that's when they are developing their beliefs, their views of what's true, what's wrong. And many parents, they really have no other option than public school. And they have to realize they may be blessed with a Christian teacher who is going to take a little bit of freedom that they have. They're bound to follow a curriculum that's going to leave God out. But they may add a few things and help the kids know that, you know, this is what it says, but here's some things that I believe. But the further along they go in the education, the more likely a teacher who does that is putting their very job at risk. And if one student complains, it'll go to the administration. They're told they can't do that. They brought God into the curriculum because even questioning evolution or any of the evidence that seems to support it, the only alternative it is that God was there and did that. So by questioning evolution, you are actually promoting the other viewpoint, which is that God has been involved. And the Supreme Court has supported that for the last 30 years. And that's just the world we live in. So what you have to do is prepare your kids. You've got to take time to prepare your kids. Now, there are enormous amounts of really good resources out there. I am going to mention my website. It's searchforthetruth.net. Just string the words together, searchforthetruth.net. Tons of videos, good, interesting stuff, everything from 2 and 3 minute examples of animals and fish and parts of things that could never have made themselves, why the Big Bang has problems, doesn't answer all the problems, how the world around us can be so blind and not see what really is very, very obvious when it's right in front of their faces. There's not some huge human conspiracy where everybody's being trained to hide the truth. What's going on, help your children understand this. It's not their job to argue with their teachers. It's not their job to disrespect their teachers. It's not their job to be the teacher. But just realize authority figures, the other students around you, teachers, they're trained to think in a way that leaves God out. And that is going to make them blind to other possibilities. Many of the examples and the lectures and the teachings I do end with an example of when any human being is trained to think in a certain way, trained that a certain thing's a truth over and over and over again to the exclusion of any other possibility, it forms a framework of reality in our mind. And we subconsciously don't have to rethink it. We just know something's true immediately because we've been trained that. Now, that doesn't mean it's true. We've been just trained to believe it's true. Now, when something comes in that contradicts it, it is just immediately rejected. It's immediately set aside. Even if there's evidence for it, it's just set aside because that framework has been established. So the children need to understand their teachers, the textbooks, they're coming at biology, they're coming at geology, they're coming at world history, they're coming at whether humans are inherently sinful or inherently good. They're coming at all of the biblical issues of history, science, and human nature from a non-biblical viewpoint. And everybody's been trained through the system to think that way. So you have to, as a parent, in a parallel path, show them what the Bible actually says in a clear, straightforward, definitive way. And you have to know it yourself. And then you have to show them the evidence for why it is true. Both have to be happening simultaneously. If you're just dealing with biblical stuff, they're being trained to reject the Bible. And you're going to lose because it's going to be done over and over and over again. And it's going to be done repeatedly. And it's going to be done authoritatively. And they're going to see examples of why the Bible can't be true. And if all you're doing is saying, here's what it says, believe it, you're going to lose. If you're just talking about a bunch of evidence, here's the evidence for creation here, here's the evidence for creation there, here's the complexity of life, here's the statistics, but you're not combining it with biblical truth and why it matters, you're also going to lose because they're going to hear far more information supporting evolution. But it's just information. It's not facts. It's how you interpret the facts that will determine what you come to believe to be true. And the facts are going to be interpreted in an evolutionary way. And the same with the age of creation. It's a very, very important issue that's foundational to everything else. To the age of the earth is foundational to how do we interpret the rocks. The age of the earth is foundational to how old is creation. The age of the earth is foundational to has death and disease and suffering always been around. It's foundational to, well, if God exists and things are millions of years old and the rock layers are millions of years old, and life is too complex to have made itself and too complex to have slowly changed into something else, you either have to believe, well, then God made a certain kind of animal and he waited millions of years and then he just added information to make a new animal. And then he waited millions of years and added new information to make a new kind of animal. Waited hundreds of millions of years and added new information to make a new kind of animal. Well, we don't see that happening today and there's no evidence for it. So it must not be credible. But if you accept the time frame, that's the only thing left because those animals are buried in all those rock layers. So it distorts everything to distort the time frame. So see, again, I haven't spent hours here, but I've all of a sudden started to lay that framework of here's two different belief systems and here's the danger of only accepting the one you're going to be hearing in the schools and in the textbooks and by the teachers. And here's why they're teaching that. But here's some of the evidence that shows it can't be true. Okay, so, and again, we can now start to get into some of that evidence, but you start with what's going on all around you. Why do people believe what they believe? And it's just a belief system. It's not fact, it's not science, it's an interpretation of the facts that fit their belief system.
So I think that what everything you've said in this beginning, and I know we haven't gotten too specific, but I love it because it's foundational, like you said.
It is foundational. We're starting with foundational stuff.
Yes. And that to me is so important when you're going through and laying that for someone who is questioning either side of this. I want to put down foundation so you understand where we're coming from, where somebody else is coming from. You put this down. Okay, here, this is where we start.
Right.
Going forward, I guess one of my observations as well is, you know, one of the biggest things that people will talk about, and a lot of people, evolutionists, will always talk about the very simplistic way. Oh, you know, we come from the great ape family, and we have evolved from the great ape family. And then they've tried so hard to find missing links and things of this nature. And that's always been something that, you know, we've dealt with, and they'll come up with a different one here or there, like the Piltdown Man, which ended up being the tooth of an extinct pig that they made a whole person around. Right. So when we get into more of these specific examples, like when we're confronted with something to that effect, where do we approach that? I guess, give me some more specific examples, just where we're seeing the falsehood of evolution being brought in and shown as fact, as truth. And I'm kind of picking your brain here for some of your more specific examples.
Yeah, and let's just look at two examples of what is widely and broadly promoted. We'll start with this whole idea of apes turning into people. And it's the lining up of two things that are similar, and assuming because they're similar, that proves one turned into the other. That's what goes on with this whole ape to human evolution concept. And if your starting assumption is God didn't one day here on Earth, there were no people. And the very next day, there are two fully formed, fully human beings standing here on planet Earth. And that is what the Bible tells us. Okay. That is very clearly what we're told is reality. But if that's just because of your training, because of your education, because of everything you've heard, because of all the input you've gotten through your whole life, that is an inconceivable, absurd concept. The only other possibility is that something that wasn't a human had to have turned into a human. There are no other options. If humans weren't made, some sort of a thing that must have looked something like some sort of an ape had to have turned into us. So it is a fact in the minds of people who are trained to leave out the idea that God has supernaturally done certain things, and making of human beings is one of them. So you have to acknowledge, well, yeah, I mean, if you leave out God, that has to be a fact. Don't deny it. That's the way people think. So now the question is it a fact? Is it the truth? Well, let's look at one of the things that's been used to promote it for years. And you mentioned one. There's been dozens, if not, you know, approaching 100 different apish kind of creatures and bones and conglomerations of stuff that have been proposed as things that look like, well, they really do look like they're in between apes and us, and they're not quite apes, and they're not quite humans. And that's a whole hour-long discussion in and of itself. But something that has been promoted ever since the 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, 2000s, for about 30 to 40 years is a statement that the DNA of apes is 97 or 98% identical to the DNA of human beings. And as I said, we have about 6 billion letters in our DNA book. It's a book of information that tells the body how to make the correct protein molecules that form the cells. And we're forming trillions of them, you know, every year inside of our bodies using that information. And we're told it's 98% identical. So that's two generations, you know, of school students. You know, one generation's grown into their 20s and they're having children and are now being taught the same thing. And it sounds definitive. It shows up in movies. It shows up in museums. It shows up in textbooks. It's been repeated probably millions of times over various media throughout our culture. So it's assumed to be a fact. It's presented as a fact, and it's presented as this is in absolute conclusive evidence that they're so similar, we have to have come from them. Well, in a 10-year period from about the early 2000s up until after 2010, genetic laboratories around the world, we've developed the ability to understand science enough that we can pull apart the four chemicals that line up to make the DNA code. Now, the DNA code, everything that defines what is a language fits the DNA code. And there's never been an example of any language ever developed that did not come from intelligence. You are designing a meaning to a sequence of symbols. Now, it could be smoke signals. It can be a zero and a one. And that's the binary code. And every language, every bit of knowledge in all of humanity can be captured by assigning meanings to two symbols, a one and a zero. So it, in the DNA code, it's four different chemicals that line up in a certain way. And the sequence creates information that forms shapes, that forms parts, that forms cells. Well, we learn how to decode it. Just take all of that information, the lining up of those four chemicals, and line them up in sequence on a page, page after page, chapter after chapter, book after book, till we've got the whole 6 billion letters lined up. And then we did the same thing with a chimpanzee. And lo and behold, when you just line them up letter by letter, it turns out there are 600 million differences. Not 1%, not 2%, approaching 20% difference. And you have to, when you transform an ape to a human being, we see the pictures where they just kind of morph the shape and they take and they bend over ape-like shape and they straighten it up and they stretch it out and they have it walking upright instead of like bent over with long fingers and hands hanging way down. And they just morph one shape into another. But to change an ape into a human, you have to eliminate 10 to 20% of the information in the ape, and it has to be totally gone and recreate 20 to 30, 10 to 20% totally different information. Now, it's not random. It has to be specific bits and bytes. No information computer engineer ever would believe you can just randomly change a bit and a byte here and you're going to transform one computer program into a more complex, more useful computer program. It will always destroy the information. And statistically, with 6 billion letters, and you're going to get specific letters in specific places, or it's useless. You can't even randomly get a specific set of 50 letters in the right spot by randomly rearranging them billions of letters per second in the entire age of the known universe, let alone 600 million changed one into the other and the original ones disappear. We know you couldn't transform the DNA structure information of an ape into a human being. And there have been technical papers written on this with silence coming back in result. So just that one example, and we know it has never happened. It's a scientific impossibility. And yet that means the only other option must be true. God wrote the code, created the structure, created the cells, created the body, and supernaturally made us. Now, that's not religion. It's a belief, because we can't go in a laboratory and reproduce it, that it's the only logical explanation for the information and the resulting systems that have to all be there at once. So that's just a look at some of the evidence that supports, you know, the reality of the biblical worldview being the truth.
So, and when you're talking about that and you're talking about those changes, those would all have to be positive permutations. They'd all have to be in a good way. Well, and we see entropy.
Or the positive ones have to overcome the negative ones.
Well, but there is
science shows us that there's probably 10,000 random changes. But like every single generation of human beings, when you have the next generation, there are at least 100 permanent random mutational mistakes in every cell in your body, every nucleus of every cell in your body. Every cell that divides as we age adds mutational random changes to the point where our skin is sagging, our muscles are deteriorating, the organs are ceasing to function. We mutate to death within 100 years of cell division after cell division after cell division. And if one specific thing doesn't kill us, everything eventually does. So we know it's all deteriorating downward. Generation after generation is getting worse. Cell after cell in our individual bodies are getting worse. That is reality. The deterioration doesn't necessarily always have a negative effect, but like a molecule of rust on a car, you can't see it, but rust molecule follows rust molecule follows rust molecule until eventually the whole thing deteriorates and falls apart. And there's no stopping it. And that is what's happening in every organism, in every body, and throughout every generation. So where's the upward evolution? Where's the adding of useful functional information? Occasionally a mistake can happen and it can have a useful function, but it's not adding a higher level of information. And there's no example of any mutation who's ever done that. So again, the evidence shows it's fantasy to believe evolutionary processes are truth and reality and have caused one animal to turn into another or an ape to turn into a human being. So we're talking science, we're talking evidence, we're talking actual experimental results, not religion. But they're going to lead you to either one conclusion or the other that can't be proven, because evolution of molecules to man, bacteria to people, is a belief system. It's not science per se. God, having created us, is a belief system. But science supports the possibility of one of those viewpoints being true, as long as you're not immediately rejecting that God's existence as a possibility. But it totally contradicts and denies that evolution could possibly be true, and they have nothing else. So, see, this is the way you need to approach it with your kids. Help them understand, you guys are being trained to reject God and believe something that can't possibly be true. The issue with evolution is, scientifically, it does not work. Do not back down from that. And biblically, it destroys people's trust that God's word can be understood in a clear, straightforward way, with given enough time, results in the destruction of people's faith.
So we have there the physical entropy, and we also have our spiritual entropy that we're seeing in the world today. So
it's honestly, I'm going to get spiritual for a moment. It is probably the greatest attack of Satan upon the faith of people in our present age, and in wherever it is accepted, given enough time, a few generations, it destroys the faith of entire cultures. And it's not true. It is a lie. And scientifically, it can't be true. But if you leave out the only other option, it's the only thing left, and that's why people believe in it.
Yeah, it is you're always allowed to get spiritual with me. I'm just telling you, you're always allowed. I love it. But but at the same time, I love picking your brain because of your intellect and your knowledge on this subject too. But you said you had two specific examples you wanted to look at.
Sure. Well, that's the whole taking it to that kind of the end point of evolution. Where did people come from? Mm-hmm. Now we'll take it back to the beginning point of evolution. You can't have any evolution until you have life. So in any biology book, they'll start with, early life. Where did life come from here on planet Earth? How could it have come into about? And it still all goes back to an experiment done by a man named Stanley Miller and his graduate student, Yuri, back in 1952. And we've come to learn a lot about the complexity of a single cell. And I started to describe it earlier. A cell is a machine of such complexity, we've never come close to building anything like it. But even a simple amoeba or a bacteria, it has at least 1,000 parts or more. And each of those parts is specifically designed of a specific shape, a specific function. And they all have to be there for it to reproduce itself, for it to function, for it to take in oxygen, process oxygen, turn it into energy, have a nucleus that has information like a library, and all that has to be there. So the most common chemical that makes up the parts is called a protein. It's just a general term for a long chain of amino acids that fold and bend to form the right three-dimensional structure inside the cell. So, imagine a watch. It has to have gears of exactly the right size. It has to have pins to hold the gears in position. It has to have levers that move in and out and cause the gears to move forward. And each of these have to have the right shape or nothing works. That's the cell, all those parts coming together. So we got to explain, where do the proteins come from? That's the starting point if you're going to explain life. And to explain the proteins, you have to explain, where do the amino acids, where do those building blocks come from that form the protein? Well, Yuri was a chemist and Miller were chemists, biochemists. They understood these biological complex chemicals called proteins. And he knew to make an amino acid, the building block, you have to start with carbon And the carbon often comes from methane, which is a string of carbon, or ammonia, which adds nitrogen, or hydrogen gas, which is hooked up to all the different carbon molecules. And he thought, well, I wonder if we can just add energy and get these gases to come together to form some amino acids. So that's what he did, circulated them through a flask, add a spark, which is like lightning. And lo and behold, and I think he already knew this was going to work because he chemically synthesized these things, he formed some amino acids. Now, this is promoted in every textbook and every natural history museum as the starting point of life. Billions of years ago here on Earth, lightning must have struck a pond or ocean or some swamp, and you know, that massive amount of energy transformed the stuff that was there in that swamp into a few amino acids. And amino acids will naturally link up and will form proteins. So the students think, well, there we've made amino acids, and amino acids make proteins, and they just kind of get encapsulated. And they've even shown how you can mix this mixture of kind of oily stuff in aqueous solutions, and you put oil and water, they separate and they form little blobs. And that's what happens in these flasks. Oh, now we've got little blobs filled with amino acids. We must be on the way to making life. And oh my goodness, constantly they're looking for amino acids in space probes and water on Mars. And it's always implied if we find water or we find, you know, hydrogen and methane and gases that could form amino acids, this is how life has formed in our solar system or in outer space. So that's what the students hear. Now, what I just described is experiments that seem to show how the building blocks of life could have formed. And that's all the students will hear. And they're going to walk away with the strong impression that really smart people have shown how life could start to form. But here's what the students aren't told. It's just flat out left out of the explanation. Why? And I'll get to that what's left out in a second. But why? Because if you can show a step in the right direction, you can now start to believe, well, we don't have all the answers, but we've moved in the right direction to start to understand how this could have happened without God. And we don't need God, because God involves faith, and here are science experiments that have moved us in that direction. And if this isn't the right direction, then there's nothing else out there. God's the only thing left. So the things that contradict it are just kind of like left out. Well, we'll figure those out in the future. Well, that's faith. If you haven't explained it, you're having faith in something in the future will explain it. So it's one faith versus another faith. It's not science versus religion again. It's just two faiths. You haven't explained it. But here's what's being left out. Now let's objectively look at what's just happened. We've made a few amino acids. What turns out, every single time this experiment has been done for 50 years, actually we're coming up on 70 years, you always get a 50-50 mixture of like left-hand amino acids and right-hand amino acids. Now that's like left-hand gloves and right-hand gloves. They're identical in almost every shape, but you can't put a left-hand glove on your right hand. It never works. Life only uses left-handed amino acids, but every time the experiment's done, you get a 50-50 mixture, and they're chemically reactively identical. There is no known way for them ever to link up when you get a blend of them and get only the left-hand ones linking up. But life has only left-handed amino acids. So it could never happen. The right kind of amino acids could never link up to form a useful biochemical. Second, every form of life, from a bacteria to a human being, and every banana tree, whales, everything that's alive, the proteins are made from 20 different amino acids. Every one of them is different, like a different shaped Lego block. And it's only using the different shapes and putting them in the right order that you get the final structure that is useful and functional in life. This experiment only formed somewhere between 6 and 8 of those amino acids. The other 12 have never been formed in this way. So it couldn't possibly be the right answer for where everything came from, because you don't even have the right starting materials. And then you form all sorts of formaldehydes and stuff that cap the ends that keep the protein chains from forming. And if you leave it in an environment with oxygen, it destroys the proteins and the amino acids so they can't link up. And if you do it in a pond or a swamp somewhere, you have cosmic rays and radiation and ultraviolet stuff, waves coming down, and it tears apart the proteins faster than they're being formed. And you have to line up the amino acids in a specific useful functioning order and have all 1,000 of them for the first form of life to form. And statistically, it couldn't happen. So what this experiment actually shows is that life could not possibly have ever formed in this way. All of the problems are ignored. All of them are shoved aside. The students aren't allowed to think about any of the issues, all of which show it couldn't possibly work. And they're just led to believe this is how life formed. So we know it's not true. Now, is that science? Is that looking for the truth, looking for what has actually really in reality happened? Or is it just blind indoctrination to hang on to a faith system? In faith that somewhere in the future, all these problems will be overcome, and none of them have been overcome in 70 years. If that's the best that's ever been able to be developed in 70 years to explain how life could form, and is fraught with problems that have never been solved, it's obvious that it couldn't have made itself. And that's what God says. It's obvious he had to have done it. So again, the belief in God is not an irrational, non-scientific belief. It is actually the most logical answer if you're actually looking for the truth for why life exists. And similar problems exist as you try to explain how could a bacteria, how could an amoeba have turned into a human being? You have to explain how could two sexes have formed? How could something that's perfectly designed and incredibly efficient at making copies of itself by just splitting, why would it form a male and a female with vastly different information, and they have to happen simultaneously or the next generation immediately dies and then find each other? It's an absurdity that it could have happened by random chance. And yet it's taught, well, that it just happened billions of years ago in the past. So every step along the way of evolution has enormous issues. When we actually look at science, it shows they couldn't have happened. And that's how God reveals himself to us. But we have to be showing these things to the next generation. And the resources on your site, on my website, when you Google these things and look for people, scientists studying creation from a Christian perspective, the evidence is there. And our job as parents and as Christians who have the light to shine in an ever-darkening society is to get the evidence in front of people in a way that's clear and understandable. And this podcast is part of that. And thank you for making me part of it.
I really appreciate you too. One thing to that same, what you just talked about, is also something doesn't come from nothing. So even if we say that this lightning strike hit this puddle and this happened, well, where did that lightning come from? Where did that puddle come from? Where were these things before? So, right. There's so many holes. There's so many things.
And that goes right back to the whole Big Bang. Yeah. Most people don't understand it. But if you want to believe a Big Bang, an expansive explosion, turned into everything, if you start with something, you have to explain where the something came from.
Exactly.
The foundation of cosmology today and the Big Bang is that nothing turned into everything. And yet the most tested, most understood, most affirmed law of all science that forms a foundation of chemical engineering, my specialty, and engineering and physics and all the sciences is that matter and energy can never be created and never be destroyed. Mm-hmm. So if you look at this box we call the universe and you say, where did the box come from? The Big Bang pretends that nothing turned into everything that slowly turned into stars and then eventually turned into galaxies that created other elements that turned into planets that turned into life and so on. But it starts with nothing. Well, science shows us that nothing can become nothing, and every experiment confirms it. So right from the get-go, we know the truth. There has to be something outside the box of the universe who have created the time, matter, space, and energy, and they're all interrelated, to have started it all, because it couldn't have made itself. And experimentation shows that. So your point, I just want to add the kind of scientific foundation to support what you just said.
You say it much more eloquently than I ever could, so I appreciate that. Bruce, why don't you tell everybody one more time where your website is, where they can find your books, because you are a heck of an author as well. Why don't you let everybody know where that can be found?
Sure. It's again, it's searchforthetruth.net, searchforthetruth.net. I just recently received, and it was just published in the last few months, my latest book. It's called A Christian's Guide to Refuting Evolution. It walks you through cosmic evolution, biological evolution, chemical evolution, geological evolution, the idea that the rock layers will lay down slowly over billions of years, looks at the fossils, looks at all the textbook's examples of evolution, and then shows you what's being left out. And it's written on a elementary, junior high, at most senior high level. It's filled with demonstrations, examples, activities, but it also contains QR codes that link to, I have an 18 part series where I filmed all over the United States in the Grand Canyon at science museums, at Mount Rushmore, at Mount St. Helens, and so on, the Parthenon in Tennessee, talking about ancient cultures and chemical evolution and genetics and cosmology and biology and so on. And there's links in that book and on the website to all this teaching. So it's a great place to just go and learn more, because the more you learn, the more confident you get. And then you don't have to be defensive. You don't have to be argumentative. You don't have to get upset when people start talking to you about stuff you know can't be true. You can just start to challenge them with questions like, well, how could nothing turn into everything? How could the complex parts, way more complex than a watch that have to be the perfect shape, have ever just developed randomly by themselves to form a cell? Have we ever seen this happen in a laboratory? Then is it science or is it faith? And just bring people back to those kind of questions. And I think it'll have a lot of impact over time.
Well, 1 Peter 3:15 says, always be able to explain a reason for the hope that you have, but do so with gentleness and respect.
It does.
Bruce, I appreciate you. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us. And I cannot wait to get with you in person. It's going to be magic, I'm telling you.
Anytime. Thank you, Steve. God bless you. Keep doing what you're doing.
Have a great night, my friend.
You too.